Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Luke Gentry. 4 years of career experience, currently a lieutenant on Quint 20 for Cibolo Fire Department in Texas. When showing up to shift, we must bring the energy, as Luke states. When you have individuals who are trying to better the organization, those around them, including themselves, a target will be directed toward that individual by the naysayers. What you do with that target is up to the individual. We are all human and will have days when we just don't feel it. But from day one, if we can establish within our crew or organization a culture promoting positivity, good energy, and wanting to be better at the job, when we have days where one isn't up to par, we have the rest of the crew to pick up the slack and provide what we need to get the job done. With that, I present Mr. Luke Gentry.
Luke Gentry with Cibolo Fire Department, Lieutenant. Talking about how I got into the fire service. It's not really the stereotypical story arc of how someone transitions into the fire service. Growing up as a kid, I didn't really know even that the fire department or firefighters existed. I wasn't that kid, you know, standing on the street corner that we all see and we wave at that's stoked about firemen. I just didn't know any of that stuff existed. So it wasn't front of mind. I ended up going through, you know, high school, still kind of unaware. College as well, got my degree in kinesiology and thought I was going to be a pilot in the Air Force. Did a couple other things after being buried with student debt, got in the oil field and did that for 5 years, working exactly the opposite time commitment. It was 2 weeks on, where you're gone for 2 weeks and then home for a week. So that was cool to see. Now looking at our schedule now and having lived that was rough, but it was good money.
Right.
Worked real hard at that. Ended up working my way up to being a field engineer and running a crew. It's kind of like the lieutenant with a few extra responsibilities. And then got distracted with a job in the bicycle industry. It was like a shiny object. Thought it was going to be a dream job and ended up being more of a distraction. I enjoyed a lot of parts about it, but it was in the oil field that I kind of discovered I'm on a crew of four or five guys. Getting to see people develop and be the best version of themselves and working closely with other guys like that, I found out was my passion, like trying to develop people, trying to develop a team and make a team where all the other crews performed decently. But when we showed up, it was like, oh shoot, that thing that was supposed to take 2 hours, you can get it done in 30 minutes. I didn't know that was possible. And, like the classic complaining of shift work. That's where I came up with kind of one of my tenets of belief that works really well in the fire service. Back then I came up with like, we should expect that we're going to do more because that's the standard to which we hold ourselves. So instead of showing up and complaining like, oh, that crew left us extra work or they did this or that, or didn't do something good, because that's something that we can do, that we're going to do it at our level, at our standard, and we'll leave them as finished up as possible, ahead as possible. And that transfers directly to, oh man, A shift didn't do this or B shift didn't do that, or no matter what shift you're on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I decided then, I started looking for things that I could, you know, work around other guys, be a part of a crew and see people develop, and discovered the fire service and started heading that way. Got distracted with the bicycle industry for 3 years. Did kind of a business consulting outside sales job, which was fun, getting to ride bikes and see technology and equipment before it came out. But the fire service is definitely where I belong.
Okay.
So yeah, got all my certifications and then got distracted in the bicycle industry and let a couple things expire. So I had to re-up those and start applying. And a buddy of mine that I raced bikes with, was already at Cibolo. He was like, hey, come on, man. We got some quality people here. It's still a fledgling department, building a foundation, has a lot of growing to do, very young department. And they need people to come build something. So I was like, all right. And
that was it.
It was 4 years ago. So.
Okay.
And looking back at it, I know you said Cibolo's are definitely, because I see the advertisements all the time. It's a growing department. You know, you guys are adding more stations, personnel, apparatus, things of that nature. But within 4 years, you're already a lieutenant. So my question to you is, when you got into the fire service, was it everything that you expected, or was it totally different than what you imagined?
So, yes and no. I expected all of the downsides that come along with anything, fire service, oil field, or anything when you're around human beings. There's going to be negatives and positives, right? So I expected that, and I was not surprised that when you are around other human beings, there's always someone complaining about something. There's always something that if you look for it, there's something to be happy about, be thankful for. There's always people pushing the envelope and wanting to better themselves and better the people around them and improve things. And there's always people that are kind of the boat anchor, if you will, tend to drag down the crew, drag down the shift, you know, that kind of thing. So it was what I expected because I already had experiences with humans and human nature and the way organizations work. Something that after now just 4 years in the fire service, I should have seen it coming, and I feel this way about most things. I wish there were more of a stratification, such that in the military, you can be just a, you know, basic soldier, which is important. You could be elevated and in a, you know, well, I went and gained these extra skills, and now I can do these extra things. And then I gain these extra skills, and I can do these things. And then there's the pointy tip of the spear guys that are on the cutting edge. But in the fire service, you're a fireman. And you could push yourself, push the envelope, and be capable of all these things, but you're a fireman. Or you could just ride recliners and be a fireman. So that kind of single level, no differentiation between people that really put out and people that are not putting in the work, is kind of, it feels like an unfortunate fact of the fire service.
Absolutely. I'm not really sure how we can fix that. I mean, I'm sure there are some departments out there that do fix that, but then too, with seeing how with how the economy is and the lack of applicants, I think you have a lot of organizations that just they know about the issue, but they turn a blind eye because they look at it as, well, it's a body in a seat. And to me, that mentality is totally unacceptable because you're not only putting the crew's life in jeopardy, but also the community that we said, hey, you know, we're here for you. Call 911 at any time.
Yeah, big time. And you can't fix the whole fire service, right? Like you, people get carried away all the time. Like, oh, I'm just little old me. I can't change the world, right? You might not be able to change every single fire department to fix that problem in every community. You might not even be able to change your fire department, but whatever position you're in, you've got influence. And you can't change the world, but you can change your world. And if you're a fireman, when you get to be that senior fireman, you earn your place to be able to speak to someone else and help them. You and the other guy in the back seat are going to be, you know, hitters. You're going to be the ones that are, you know, bringing the work, saving the people, putting yourself between danger and the people we're there to protect. And when you get to be a promoted position, you start driving, you get put in charge of some trainings, that kind of thing. Your influence grows. You get to be lieutenant and you can kind of build the schedule for the day and really dig into the development of your guys, then you're in control of that crew. And you might even start to influence neighboring stations that say, like, hey, what are y'all doing over there? What are y'all doing today? You want to do some joint training? Let's do some, you know, multi-company operation training. And you start building, or they know when you show up, you're showing up to work, and the guys at the station down the street go, God, we need to get on it. Those guys are, did you see the way they showed up? Did you see how they popped out the apparatus? Like, let's step our game up. Right. So your sphere of influence grows. If you're a battalion chief, you can influence your whole battalion. Once you're a chief, you can influence the whole department. You still can't fix the whole fire department or the whole fire service. But as your influence grows, and I know people have talked about it before, we need those people, those hungry people that want to fix things in positions that maybe they don't want to be in.
That's facts. Yeah.
But we'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a whole nother can of worms for sure. But while we're on that topic, what are the most important elements or ingredients for a high performing team or crew?
Okay. So I'll name off a couple of them. I know we could go on all day just listing important elements for a high performing team, right? But I just picked a few that kind of sit at the top of the heap for me, and we can talk about them a little bit. I picked humility, competence, acceptance of responsibility, energy or initiative, and selflessness. So, humility, I mean, I know people take humility as like not putting yourself first, not being carried away with what you're doing, but a lot of times that's not being so carried away with we have to do it my way, we have to do my plan. That really helps you earn respect from the guys you work with if you're willing to hear them out. You're not so stuck on my way or the highway, right? What's that saying? It's amazing what a team can accomplish when no one cares who gets the credit. When the point is what we're getting done, not my name's got to be on this or else it's not going to get done at a high level. That's not how you have a high performing team. So, yeah, humility is putting yourself below the needs of the team. And that goes for every seat in the apparatus, every spot on the fire department, right? Like the battalion chief isn't trying to make himself look good. The lieutenant's not trying to make himself look good. The driver's not trying to say, well, because I spotted the apparatus here, that's why we were successful. Everyone just does their job to the highest level to make everyone else successful so that the mission gets accomplished. Competence, that just requires putting in the work. Sometimes it's going the extra mile and doing the research and knowing the most recent findings of, whether it's statistics or science or whatever, of how water's applied or where people are found or, where you're going to start your search, where you're most likely to find victims, all that kind of stuff, or out doing the work, putting in the sweat equity and being good at your job, competence. Without that, you're fighting an uphill battle. And then acceptance of responsibility, that's kind of what I talked about earlier, like that expectation that you're going to be the crew that does more. I feel like that should be true both on the day-to-day regular, sweeping, mopping, cleaning apparatus. When you show up and something's not done, okay, good, we get to do it at our level, at the highest level. It alleviates the complaints about the department or other crews. It can change the morale of at least that crew that's decided to
Correct.
accept responsibility for things. And, it might not be your fault, but it can be your responsibility. And then energy or initiative, that's just what it takes to keep going. And something that I like to remind myself, like I try to be the one that brings that energy, that has the initiative every time and says, all right, let's get out there and do this today. But I'm human. I'm not perfect. And I'll have that talk with the guys on my crew. Like, I don't care if you're, just a couple months on, you've got the ability to bring your energy and say, hey, what are we working on today? Hey, would you get outside and work with me on ladders? Like, I don't want to drop that crap on my head when people are waiting for me to pull them out of a window. Like, be the one to bring the energy, and that's going to flow back and forth in a crew, right? Like, some days it's going to be one guy, some days it's going to be another guy. You had a rough days off, you got a new baby crying all night, you dealing with stuff at home, whatever it is, you come in, you might not be able to bring that top notch, like, let's go out and get after it energy. You might come in a little draggy. Someone else on the crew is going to come in full of Red Bull and ready to get after it. So everyone on the crew has that the responsibility to bring the energy and, pull everyone else outside. Like, hey man, I'm gonna go get some mask up drills in. Y'all time me and then at least get two reps in. Like, that's kind of our minimum. We get done with lunch and it's like, let's at least throw two ladders. And then of course you get out there and like you get done with your two throws per person and everyone's like, oh, well, let's try this. Well, let's do that. Or have you tried it this way? And then you get, it turns into a whole thing. But just go out there and do two. And if that's all you got in you, you can hang it up. But go out there and, we'll each get two mask ups. And of course, you get your stuff on and start going, and you're like, oh man, my thumb got caught up on my hood that time. I'm gonna get it in the single digits next time. You start start chasing something and you're out there for an hour just masking up.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But, and then selflessness, that kind of goes with the humility, but it's worth restating in a different way. It's just thinking of the other members of the crew and the citizens before yourself. I think without selflessness, a team can get really twisted around on itself and get in a pretty bad place.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay. All right. So when you joined, you know, and let's just say like within your first 6 months or so, did you try to find that person or that crew that you were like, they're dialed in top notch, like I want to be like them? Or as I would say, maybe the case with some departments, you know, you get on the department and then you kind of get thrown into a crew that's, you know, their personas, they're not the greatest. And so like, you know, you have to kind of either stay the course until you can find a different crew or whatever, or do your time or whatnot. But what did you do?
That's a really good question. So when I got hired on, remember I said earlier that I'm at a real young department.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not too long before I got hired that we had gone from being volunteer to part-timers, you know, paid, all that kind of stuff. That transition had been made pretty recently. And when we went full-time, a lot of the experience that was at the department, they were part-timers. So they're working another job and then part-timing. So whenever it went full-time, most of the people, like the longest people we got on that are actually on a truck right now are, you know, we got a guy with 10 years, 11 years, something like that. A couple guys that came over from other departments that are around 10 or 11 years. But most people are in that 5-6 year range, 3 or 4 years. So there wasn't really that super high level, you know, that high level crew. There were individuals definitely pushing the envelope, definitely doing the research, doing the extra legwork and putting in the work to elevate themselves and try to bring those people around them. But I think I had a vision coming in just because of what I've had done in the oil field, had a vision of how to build something like that, but just came in and tried to learn as much as I could from everybody around me. It didn't matter, you know, who you were. And we even were in a spot back then with no battalion chiefs in place, only 2 stations, and trying to solve personnel issues, just shuffling people around. So there'd be one crew, but then all the drivers shifted one shift over, like A went to B, B went to C, C went to A.
Okay.
And the lieutenants did the opposite. So there was a couple of those big mix-ups, and having some crew continuity didn't last for too long. So there were some shuffle arounds. It was not a whole lot of togetherness at that point. But once we got battalion chiefs, got some crew continuity, started building something, I feel like you really saw some crews gel together and become a unit. Before that, it wasn't like you think of, you know, the crew that's worked together for years and you don't have to speak when you get on scene because everyone knows exactly what the other person's going to do. You got kind of built in, like, oh, hey, let's do that one thing. All right, go. And everyone busts out and grabs exactly what they're supposed to grab. You know where you're supposed to be. Real minimal communication because the communication's already been done in training. All that wasn't necessarily built in then. So I had a vision of it, but didn't have that to like jump on and just latch onto at the time.
Okay. All right. When you mentioned quantity versus quality, what specifically are you talking about?
So, some of these topics are from the little thought of the week that I've
okay.
It started out as a thing a couple years ago that I would type up a little thought of the week, real short thing meant to be presented real superficially, and then I put it on the table and let my crew read it. Each person would read it separately, have time to kind of think over it. And then we each get to share our opinion about that topic. And it's a way to learn from each other, right? Because everyone's got something they can share and you can learn from each other. But then also it's a chance to learn about each other and see what your perspective is, what my perspective is. We can share, kind of get closer. And then my chief said, well, why don't you send that out a little further? Why don't you send that out to the officers? Why don't you send that out to the rest of the department? And it kind of grew from there. So now I'm sending it out to, you know, friends and family across the fire service and beyond. So the quantity versus quality, Seneca, a philosopher from back in the day, said it's quality rather than quantity that matters. And normally I tend to agree with that, right? I like quality, high quality stuff rather than just a whole bunch of crap. But there's an exception worth talking about. And that's when you realize that the highest quality sometimes is only achieved through quantity, meaning to achieve the highest levels of quality, sometimes you have to engage in the process of iteration and you have to put in reps and spend the time doing a large quantity of work to arrive at a polished product and really get quality out of it. So you can't just say, well, I'm gonna go out and do one quality hose pull today and load it back up and we're done. Sometimes you got to go out and put in the quantity so that you find the quality. And that one started churning in my head. I heard about an experiment done in some college where over the course of a semester, one pottery class, I think it was pottery, got the assignment of you're going to make one pot for the whole semester. You only have to turn in one piece of pottery, but it has to be perfect. And then the other half of the class said, you've got to turn in, you know, 1,000 pieces of pottery. Just make a crap load, right? And at the end of the class, the people that made 1,000 that weren't so much judged on quality had a higher quality product because they put in the reps. And the people with doing one quality pot and just had to do one didn't have the experience, so they didn't turn out a good product. So, yeah.
No, reps I was going to say, I can relate that to reps. Like, in order to get good at something, yeah, you can't just do it one time and be like, all right, like if you were successful, like, all right, I'm good. No, it's a continuous motion of repetition and continue. Even when you have it figured out and you're pretty good at it, continue that, because that way you don't lose it. So when you said it at the end of when you compared, you know, the college students and the pottery, I'm like, I can see where he's going with that. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, just one of those things. And you hit on an important part of it. Like, if you don't use it, you lose it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you've talked to guys that are like, oh, man, I've thrown a ladder before. Can we do something? What do people say? Can we do something more advanced?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Throw a ladder in an advanced way. Make it look easy. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm tracking with you, because like for me, you know, I'm always trying to be a better, I'm always trying to be transparent and more humble. And so like one weakness of mine is tying things, knots and ropes. I don't probably focus on that like I should, but like if I had to, I can tie something and if I had to hoist it or whatever. But you know, ropes and knots, that's my weak link, because I don't have the reps of quality and quantity on that. It's like, if I do it for our monthly topic, it's like, oh, okay, cool. And then after that, it kind of goes by the wayside and I'm focused in on more like hose pull searches, ladders and things of that nature. So yes, if you don't lose it, or if you don't use it, you lose it. And I can compare that to ropes and definitely drafting, because I haven't drafted in years. So yes.
Yep. Big time.
Okay.
Yeah, and then kind of next, the next thought was slow is smooth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all heard the saying, slow is smooth, smooth is fast, right? But then there's another train of thought out there that I'm sure we've all heard at trainings, especially the ones that are hungry and wanting to get after it and wanting to improve themselves. You go to trainings and you hear people talk about, you know, you hear them yelling at the trainees saying, you know, I better see you run with that ladder. I better see, you know, light a fire under your ass, and just really, really pushing people to hurry up, haul ass. And I get it. You have to induce some stress to train under stress and all that. But I just have seen that too often, not clarified that you're just creating stress in a training environment, and that actual operation I like to, you know, practice how you play. And in an actual operation, I need you to operate calmly and smoothly and do it once and do it right, rather than be in a hurry and drop something and pick it up or screw it up and redo it. That's going to take longer if you're in a hurry than if you're doing it smoothly. And I kind of, you know, so it's not just my opinion on, and someone else's opinion. I kind of went back to another guy from back in the day, Miyamoto Musashi, was born in 1584. So it's stuff that's been talked about for a minute. He said, when you master an art or science, your performance does not appear to be fast. The performance of an expert seems relaxed, but does not leave any gaps. The actions of trained people do not seem rushed. And reading that really hit me for what we do for our job. And it's held true in my experience through a lot of things with that saying, slow is smooth, smooth is fast. And it's counter to what you've, like I said, what you've heard some instructors say, you know, hustle, hustle, haul ass. And I'm definitely not, like, don't get it confused. I'm definitely not saying we should all be, you know, safety sallies and quit running on the fire ground. What I am saying, though, is smoothness is the level of operation to which we should aspire. You're not just running around half dressed like a chicken with your head cut off, you know, hurriedly and half-heartedly doing one task and another task. And each task should be accomplished with focus and calm confidence that comes with being a true professional. You don't see people freaked out that are professional football players, professional baseball players. You execute plays quickly and calmly. You don't get freaked out about it, and you're doing it quickly, quicker than you could if you were in a hurry. A professional takes extra time and effort to understand the why behind the task, understand the science behind the conditions and their development, and put the reps in to automate the fundamentals. When the performance of the fundamentals at the highest level has been automated, not only is it difficult to make a mistake, our brain is then freed up to pay attention to the ever-changing conditions around us. So, yeah, build confidence through competence earned by countless reps, and in the worst of situations, stay calm and unhurried. So if you know the skill, you can do it calmly. That's the quickest way you're going to be able to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Has your fastest mask up time been when you're freaking,
Yeah. No. No.
or when you just calmly do the thing, right?
Yes, sir. You know, it's definitely, I like I said, with that terminology, you know, it's some people are like, oh, that's bogus. You know, that's trash. Slow, smooth. Like, no, you do it this way. Not necessarily because, in my opinion, like there are things you can do fast on the fire ground, but then as you're either getting ready to perform that task or whatever the case may be, you might just have to slow it down just a little bit to get everything right. And then once it's good, then you can kind of proceed back to your normal speed. So yes, perfect example. Yesterday, I did show a couple of individuals I was working with mask up, like how I mask up, how I come off the truck with gloves. I tell them, I say, and I always tell people this, it's a way, not the way. I was like, but for me, the gloves, I don't have to worry about that. Like it's already on and I'm good to go. So when I went to show them how I mask up, I found myself doing it super quick. And then I was like, hold on, hold on. They've never seen this. So I was like, hold on, I apologize. I took it back off and then I kind of did it slowly for them so they can see all the motions. And then, you know, but I told him, I said, this particular skill, I said, did not happen overnight. I put in about a year's worth, one full year of getting used to the loss of dexterity with the gloves, figuring out a way where I can find where my hood is utilizing my thumbs. I figured out a technique too. Every once in a while, I'll take my hood and I'll kind of like, you'll see me kind of like flapping it in the wind just to kind of keep where I can find that gap to pull it. And then I told him, you know, there's different helmet techniques. You could take it off and it's kind of like back here. I said, I
Or the
like that.
choker.
The choker. Yeah, I tried it and I don't like that feeling. So I told him, I take it off and I put it through one of my hands and then it just dangles there. I said, that works for me. Find what works for you. But yes, if you do it smooth, then like after you get really good at it, then you could up your tempo a little bit as long as you're still perfecting the goal, such as like hose pulls. I remember when I was taught I don't know. It's probably been a little over a year. We've gone to the Minuteman load. So like my thing with my brain was I always wanted to make sure when I did the split, it was perfect. And sometimes it wouldn't be. So that would mess me up and it would kind of throw me off a little bit where I didn't grab the right coupling or the right loop, essentially. And then it wasn't until he's from Greensboro. Apologize if you're listening, or if somebody knows who he is, let me know and I'll definitely put his name out there. But he came up with a two up, one down method. So, you take the loop two up from the nozzle, one down from your shoulder, and it's perfect every single time, which is what my brain needs. And so I'm like, all right, cool. So, like, this is how I'm doing it. Now, granted, I have done it the other way, but after doing it where you do the split, I kind of visualize, all right, this is it. And listening to, I forgot who was talking about it. You don't have to have that perfect loop every single time. It will work its way out. As long as you take your time to flake it out, you'll see it. So everything you said, I can relate to the slow to smooth for sure.
And I've seen people on the other side of things putting a stopwatch to stuff, right? Getting in a hurry, and then it takes so much longer because they're tripping, they're messing it up. And do it as fast as you can do it well, right?
Yes.
If you have to walk with the ladder so you're not bashing your homies in the head on the fire ground and you're not tripping and falling, then walk with the ladder. If you've got the leg strength because you do what are those things called? Bulgarian split squats, dynamically doing the bouncing on one leg and all that. And you can sprint through location with a ladder on your shoulder, chunk it up, spin it around, go a couple clicks, lean it, mask up, and be up there because you put a zillion reps in and you got that freaking, professional athlete strength. Do it.
Do it, yes.
But if you're gonna yank it off the back of the truck, fall on your face, pick it up, trip, hit someone in the face on your way because you're in a hurry, slow down.
Exactly. Yes, sir. Exactly.
As fast as you can do it quickly.
Exactly. And it's one of those things, do like I tell people anytime I'm helping, like show them a skill. I said, do what works for you. If it works and you get it done, I don't care how it looks. You know what I mean? If there are some people, you can't control your height or certain characteristics of your body, how you were born. As long as you can do it, I don't care how it's done. As long as it's set, it's good to go. Let's rock. Like, let's go.
Agreed. So then,
I think the next one you're going to do is the danger of success.
yes. Yeah. I know it sounds kind of counterintuitive, right?
No, I kind of like, I think I'm going to like where this is going to go.
So it was based off a short quotation from Winston Churchill. Someone left a little like business card looking thing with, there's a few of them laying around the station at our station one. And, one of the quotes was from Winston Churchill. It said, "Success is not final. Failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts." It's a little simple three-liner right there. Most people focus on the second line, failure is not fatal, because it's pretty encouraging that there's life after failure, right? But the truth is that failure is one of the most powerful teachers, and we should be grateful for our failures. So I don't really focus on that one too much. The first line, however, success is not final, offers a real important lesson that shouldn't be overlooked. Victory is one of the most dangerous things we encounter on our never-ending journey of improvement. If indeed our journey is to continue, we must realize that success and victory are not permanent installments once earned. Success is rented, and rent is due every day. That's how you kill complacency. So, yeah, that's what I mean by the danger of success. You have a long string of easy wins. It's like, oh man, we're good. We got this. We don't even have to do this or that. Like, I'm not gonna, I tied a knot once. I'm good to go, right? So, and then it comes time. You gotta tie a knot to get something heavy to the roof or up to a, elevated story, and you're down there going, oh shoot, bumbling it up. And at that moment, it's like you don't get to practice anymore when opportunity comes knocking. You only have what you the preparation you already put in. When someone says, "Hey, let's fight," you don't say, "Oh, well, let me sign up for jujitsu and give me like 3 or 4 months, maybe a year of solid the practice, and then I'll take you on, bro. It's like all you get is what you've got up to that moment, and if it's nothing, that's what you're working with. So,
Yeah.
anyway.
Yeah. No, and so the way I kind of relate to that quote, I kind of take it outside the fire service.
Okay.
But you kind of mentioned it. So let's just say, all right, yeah, you got a good amount of wins. You continuously have had calls where you do something right. So I kind of relate it to sports. Anytime you have a team that is going undefeated, if you watch SportsCenter like I do, that's going to be a topic and headline up until they lose. You know what I mean? Like, will they continue the streak? And you know, in the back of those players' minds, that just that little voice of like, can we do this? Like, can we go undefeated? Can we go the entire season with such and such until something happens? And I think it was the Patriots that one year they were undefeated and then they lost their first loss came in the Super Bowl. I think it was against the Giants, I think.
Shoot.
But like, you know, the pressure of can they do it again? Can they pull it off here? Oh, they're down by 10 in the third quarter. And so that always kind of plays a part in your mind of can we continue this? Because at some point you're gonna lose. Like it is what it is. It's competition. But they always tend to put that extra bit of pressure on you.
Yep. And there's that pressure you're talking about. And then the way that it hit me was more of like the danger of getting away with something, right? Like, well, the last 50 million fire alarms we went to were nothing, right? And
Right.
so I started not putting my coat on. So I started not doing this and not hopping out with my pack. And we'll just shoot, I might not even put my pants on this time. Let's just walk in and see what's up. Oh, why is it smoky in here? Right? Like, so you get that long string of easy wins, you know, oh, it was nothing, it was nothing, it was nothing. And then all of a sudden, when it's something, you get caught with your pants down. That's kind of the way I took it, was don't let that creep in. You gotta, if you want to be ready when opportunity knocks, you gotta stay ready, or else you're gonna get bit. That's the
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And you know, it's very easy. It really has, or it really is, because complacency is one of those things where you have the notion of like this can't happen in Cibolo. Hey, did you hear what happened at the neighboring department? Yeah, that's them. Like, we're good. We got all of our stuff squared away. And unfortunately, you let it creep in, it makes a little bed, starts making a home until something happens, and then you're like, crap. And hopefully, if that does occur to you, it's not detrimental or a tragic outcome.
Right. And hopefully, I mean, ideally, right, we learn from other people's mistakes and then make that adjustment. Don't wait around for to make our own mistakes. I mean, I think about even the guys at the pointy edge of the spear, the Navy SEALs, right? During the 80s and 90s, something like that, they got nothing going on, but they're training their asses off to still be the pointy edge of the spear so that when something does happen, you know, could anyone have predicted that something big was going to happen and these guys were going to need to go be in the danger zones and reacting to the dangerous things they did in you know, the Middle East? No, but they think they're going to do some Cold War stuff, you know, or be in Russia or whatever, and they're training to take over oil rigs and ships, but they're training with their teams, with their crews on movements, and that stuff applies. So we have to stay ready, even if you think it's not going to happen in my city. Oh, it's not. Well, we're just kind of residential. Oh, we're not going to get that big thing. Well, you get mutilated down the street, and oh, how do we end up at this big warehouse? We don't really practice that stuff, that wide area search. Well, I guess we'll go inside. Then what?
That right there is not the time to be like, all right, plan A, we're gonna do this, and nobody knows what plan A is.
Yeah.
You know, so I totally get it. You know, I look at the way my department is. We don't burn like our neighboring department does, but you know, I always keep it in the back of my mind, hey man, that fire alarm might turn into something, because we've had a few of those. It's not very often, but like, you hear the fire alarm go out, and it's like, all right, well, yeah, whatever, it's fire alarm. And then you see the next page you get on your phone says working fire. You're like, working fire to what? That fire alarm? Like, for real? And yeah.
What are the changes? chances.
Yeah, for sure. So the know your limits.
Yes. Yeah. So I know we've all heard that, right? Someone telling you that or saying,
Absolutely.
oh, I know my limits. I know my limits. Or, hey, someone giving you that warning, know your limits. I know we've all heard that, but I don't think maybe everyone's understood it the same way. Some probably hear that and say to themselves, I should know my limits and stop well before them. Better safe than sorry, right? Stop well before your limits because, well, I know my limits, so I'm just never going to really approach them. The pitfall that this may end up leading you into is selling yourself short. You may never give full effort to anything and therefore leave some or likely tons of potential unrealized, leaving a lot on the table. So the way I like to interpret this is to know my limits, I must first find them. So the best way to do this is on purpose and ideally in a training environment so that on game day, you can confidently perform at or near your limit. And sometimes in training, that means, at high speed running violently into your limits and then up on the bay floor covered in sweat and, like, oh, okay, well, that's my limit. I know to pace myself right here and I can perform at my limit. Right. So if not, you're not going to confidently approach that on game day, meaning when stuff's on fire and people need help. And if you do push yourself past that and you didn't know where your limit was, you end up in a really bad spot and being a liability instead of an asset.
Absolutely.
So
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, definitely, definitely. And even if it's a simple thing as all right, know your limits. All right, let's just say normally you do. If you do like a circuit, you do anywhere between 8 to 10 rounds. So how I look at that is do one more round. Like after you get to your 10th and you're like, huh, it's like, all right, hold on. Before you start stripping down or whatever the case, do one more. Once you do that one more, then you're done. And then every day you progress by either adding an extra set or an extra rep until you get to know what your limit is. And I don't know how true this quote is. But I remember I am a huge fan of David Goggins. I read his book. I follow him on social media. Dude's a beast. I mean, I think God purposely puts certain people with mindsets like that or whatever the case may be. But he did say once your mind gets to a point where it's like, hey man, I'm tired, he's like, got 40% left. I don't know how true that is, but it's one of those things, your mind's going to be the first to, especially if you're like a runner or something and you feel a little weird creak in your knee and your mind's like, hey, let's slow it down a little bit. And it's like, no, keep going, keep pushing. So that's how I equate it to. And I agree, like you don't want to, I think the term is you don't want to go into the black, right? Or the red, whatever the case is. You definitely don't want to do that, but you should at least push yourself to see where you can go. Respectfully, of course, don't do it when you're on shift per se. Like, keep some fuel in the tank, but especially on my off days, I kind of push it where, because that way at the end of the day, I could just like lay on my couch for a little bit if I had to. But definitely little sets and reps and just look at different things. Like I remember John Spear from Colorado, he mentioned like with his Apple Watch, he'll run a fire alarm and he's like, with all the gear, look at your heart rate next time, what your heart rate was at, just doing an investigation of the fire alarm. Now imagine if that place was actually on fire. Remember, try to remember what your heart rate was, see what it's going to be then. You know what I mean? That's how you figure out how to control your speed, I guess.
Yeah, we do the same thing, except whether we're practicing forcible entry or setting up standpipe bundles on a elevated floor or doing long stretches up a stairwell or whatever. It's like, remember, we haven't started working yet. We're setting up to work. Just getting ready. So you shouldn't be worn out before it's time to start. You're just trying to get set up and make entry.
Absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
yeah, big time.
I like this one. I really do. Because I think, and it doesn't have to be any particular person. I think if you are an individual in the fire service that's trying to make positive change, trying to change the norm within your department or call out complacency, you're automatically going to have that put on you by anyone that doesn't like change. We're firemen. Firemen hate change. But I'll let you elaborate on that topic of target on my back.
Target on my back. Yes, sir. So this was actually inspired by a drawing by, what's his name, Paul Combs?
Yes.
The guy that does all that
the artwork.
Have you seen that one?
I've seen a lot of them. Hold on. You know what? I got my computer right here. So I'll let you keep talking about it, and then I'll tell you if I've seen it. I'm pretty sure I have.
It's just a pretty simple deal with a target in the background and a fireman standing in front of it. I saw that, and it kind of hit. Yep.
Yes, I have.
When you work hard, push to elevate the standard, make progress, improve constantly, you have a target on your back. The further separated from the norm or mediocrity you get, the more obvious the target becomes. It's important to note that there are different ways to perceive this target on your back. And as we know, perspective is important.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, I think, when they hear that saying, the target on my back, they're referring to the fact that haters will aim their negativity at you. Don't forget that that same target might be a much needed example for those around you. If you are truly elevating the standard and improving yourself, you effectively set the example for so many around you that need a healthy target to aim at. So to all the hitters out there and aspiring hitters, my encouragement to you is stand tall, continue your journey of improvement through hard work and consistency, and let the hate roll off your back. Continue to be the target. Be that example.
Are you okay with having, because I could tell you, not even seeing you do anything physical or training wise, the fact that you also send me those emails, that right there is easily a target on your back, because people would be like, hey, you see this email Luke's sending out? Yeah. Who does this guy think he is? Like, he thinks I'm actually going to read that? And I'm not trying to be funny. Like, that's really how firemen are. Like, yes. They'll look at something, they'll look at who it is, and then they'll automatically go, for real? Like, what's this? So have you experienced that? Not saying from like Cibolo, or not trying to have you divulge information, but I'm sure anytime you have an individual trying to do something positive, some sort of light's putting on you.
Yeah, I'm sure, man. And it's not just the emails. It's just a way of being. I'm sure you're aware of people that have like a reputation, right? Like we all have a reputation of some sort, good, bad, or indifferent. And I'm sure with sending out that thought of the week email, that people get it and they're like, oh man, what's this garbage? I don't, you know, you can skip it, you can not read it. If you're really inclined, you could let it piss you off. That's fine. the purpose though is to try and open people's eyes. And if it's getting to, you know, two or three people out of the however many people that are getting it, and they're really soaking it in and saying, oh yeah, you know, I've let a couple of weeks go by and hadn't done anything, or I've been thinking about this way and getting inside my head. I'm going to shift my perspective, right? Change out the lens through which I'm seeing life that's happening around me. If it helps out a couple people, it's worth it. It's worth the, you know, haters doing their thing. That's fine. And to your point, like, I'm sure people are saying something or thinking something, but I'm not overly concerned with it or aware. You know, I guess a lot of the haters, if they do hate, either keep it to themselves or at least keep it behind your back. So that's fine.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't mind. And for the people that are willing to say something to my face, if there is something, you know, if I put one of the topics out there and someone doesn't like it, I encourage and actually want someone to say something back, someone to email me back and be like, hey man, you said this, but I think you missed, you know, what about, have you looked at it this way? I would appreciate that. In the same way, if someone saw me doing something either in training ideally or on the fire ground less ideally and said, hey man, I saw you doing this way, you know, it would have been way more efficient to do it this way, or you know, you should really think about changing this or that, or something, you know, petty around the station, like, y'all keep missing this spot when you sweep, leaving this dust bunny. All right. And instead of being offended by it, I'm gonna say thank you.
Right.
Because then I just got better, right? I absorbed that and said, oh man, cool. I didn't know I can't fix what I can't see.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't go running around trying to find haters or anything, but I do talk to the guys on my crew, the guys at the other crews at the other stations on my shift, and my battalion chief and chief, and say, hey, from your perspective, what am I doing poorly? What am I screwing up? What could I do better at effectively? But what I'm looking for is constructive criticism. Like, say something that I'm doing wrong, please, because that would help me out.
Yeah.
A pat on the back and a good job isn't going to move me forward very far.
Yeah. I mean, those are all reaffirming messages, but yeah, sometimes you have to have those people that'll go, hey, have you thought about it this way? Or this is what you can improve on. One thing I definitely love that you stated, which I think goes on, I don't want to say unnoticed, but I think some people might forget that is the target on your back. It's not just for the people who are negative or hating towards you. It's also going towards the people that are like, I kind of want to be like this guy. Like, I want to follow his path because they're also, yeah, the target's on your back, but it's not just negative. There's positivity behind it with people who are like, hey, have you seen what Luke did? Yeah, I'm going to go try and do that. Like, so it's one of those things where the target is not just. It's not always negative in a sense. You're gonna get the best of both worlds from both the naysayers and the people who you might not know are influence a positive change.
Yes, agreed. And that's encouraging to me. Like, I know that I'm not going to always see that, but I know that there are people out there that need someone. Like we talked about earlier, someone's got to bring the energy. There are people that want to be better. That feeling, I think some of us look for it harder than others, but that feeling of being the asset over the liability, being capable and being part of something that's bigger than yourself, part of that crew that when you're fourth in and everyone else is staged, you get called up to the front of the line, like, oh, hey, truck 20, go ahead and roll up and, bring your manpower. We need to do something because they know who's on that truck, right? Like, I think, given everyone the benefit of the doubt, I think everybody wants that. And so they need someone to be that example. So, yeah, I just encourage everyone out there that's listening, because I'm guessing most of the people listening to your podcast are those ones that are motivated. They're the hitters, the ones that want to be part of something.
Exactly.
So don't be scared to do it humbly, like we talked about, respectfully, right? Selflessly. It's not about me. It's not about if you're the one going out there and trying to do it in your department or on your crew. It's not about saying, hey, look what I can do, look how badass I am. It's not about me. It's about helping someone else out. You have to better yourself. You have to make yourself stronger so that you can be that strong tree that provides shade to everyone else. You can be that, like, someone with deep roots that can someone can hang on to that's not as strong, right?
Absolutely.
So,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And I would say probably if I was a betting man, I would guess that you're probably right. We all tend to think that sometimes the people that need to hear this are listening. Most of the time it's not. They could care less. They might hear it by the wayside if someone has it on a speaker or something, and maybe something that's said sparks a notion, hey, is that me? But half the time, it's the ones that are dialed in that listen to these type of podcasts to keep going. So, yes, definitely agree. With that being said, I would like to ask, what triggered, or what, as I like to call, what tripped your breaker when it came to like, all right, lieutenant's position coming up, I'm gonna put in for that. Like, was there something that occurred, or did you feel like you could contribute positively? And beneficially to Sibla.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that's a topic that I'd like to see answered in every interview process, right? Like, why are you applying for this job?
Yes.
What's your motivation? What's your plans? Why do you want to do this? But that's a really great question, and it's the same thing like you asked earlier. What crew did you want to attach yourself to? That something to aim at? Was there someone else that had a target on them for me to, and I wanted to be that target. So that's why I put in for that position. Like we talked about, the more influence you have, the more you can do, the more people you can change and see them not just reach their full potential, but like show them that they've got a higher potential than they even thought. That's the reason I did it. It wasn't for me. I mean, freaking one of the other, who was my lieutenant at the time after the promotional process, when I got promoted, he came up, was like, "Hey bro, you're going to get a raise. You're getting so much more per hour." I was like, "Oh shoot, I forgot that was part of it." Like, I don't care about the money. I didn't get in this job for the money, obviously.
Obviously, yeah, right.
But it's for the other guys that are on my crew. It's for the other guys that are on my shift. It's for the other guys in the department. And that trickles out. I know a lot of people give the corny answer of like, well, we're here to help the citizens. And we are here to help the citizens. But that's not my direct focus. The citizens get a benefit indirectly for what my focus is. My focus is my crew, my shift, my department. I want to see that perform at the highest level and see those people be healthy, happy, confident, competent, like both as human beings and as firemen, right? So I applied for the position and competed for the position because I wanted to see that happen. And that's the position from which I could do that best, I figured.
Okay. And so with that being said, since you've been able to attain that position, has I'm trying to figure out the way to say this. Was it what you thought it would be, or it was it completely different?
The lieutenant's job?
Yes.
That is a good question. It's what I thought it would be. It's just a combination of a couple things. I think one, nobody's perfect, and I have and always will have a shitload to learn. And I'm not talking about just operationally, because yes, operationally I've got a lot to learn, but just in human interactions and like being around other people and seeing other people improve, I've got a lot to learn in how to do that better. Like I've got a vision of how I want to see people grow and see people improve and see people, you know, made healthy and brought up to the top of their game as a human being. But I think the more responsibility I take on, the more my eyes are open to like, damn, I could do a lot better at this. I don't know, feel like my passion to do the thing doesn't always match up with my ability to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just motivates me even more to want to get better at it, learn, you know. And I'm just talking about the like the passion to see people grow and improve. So yeah, always trying to learn, always trying to improve that. And the more I get to do it, the more my eyes are open that I could improve at that. It's a constant thing, I think.
Okay. All right. And it's probably safe to say it also helps where you have different avenues of individuals you could probably reach out to if you have a weak side on a certain area. And the reason why I say this is because to me, you have one of the badass chiefs within your department, Chief Tom Hollick, man. I mean, when I interviewed him and he sat down, you could just hear by the way he thinks, how he processes his words and what he speaks, like this guy's not full of shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he lives and breathes what he preaches. And it's very easily for people to say that they do that. But when you actually meet them and you go, hey, I need help in this, that, and the other, like you never hear from them or they never get back to you. But, you know, like Tom told me, he's like, hey, if you got anybody that wants to reach out to me, yeah, shoot, give them my number and have them call me. You know, that's yes. How open he is.
And so a couple of things. One, same goes for me. Whether someone wants to reach out, you got my phone number, feel free to share that. And also, anybody shoot me an email if you want to get on this thought of the week email train. I'm happy to share that, you know, wider with people that are interested in reading those little things. It's just a short little blurb. But on top of that, to your point, like, yes, and he's my battalion chief on C shift. So
okay.
I'm very thankful for that. I'm grateful to have him as a resource and to have him as like, he's, open-minded and permissive with when you're motivated and you want to do something and you want to perform at the highest level, we're all of like mind, right? Like he says, all right, get after it. That's the expectation. And he's been able to set expectations for the shift, but it goes past just him. Like, I'm super grateful for him as a battalion chief, but the other lieutenants, Brandon Shea, Lady Gonzalez, those two guys are, you know, they're hungry and they want to see everyone grow. And then, you know, firemen, it doesn't matter. You know, we got firemen of all shapes and sizes, and they're all putting in the work to see themselves and those around them get better. So it just makes my heart happy.
No, definitely. I mean, that's what it's all about right there. I'll see where he will every once in a while post a picture on the Uncommon Fireman group of him actually getting in the reps with the crews out there. That's huge. Like I said, little things like that speak volumes to firemen, because to me, it shows like, hey, if my chief, or whether it's battalion chief, administrative chief, deputy, like fire chief, if they're willing to get in the trenches and put in some work, if they can do it, I can do it. I mean, hell, they're setting the example.
And beyond that, we talked about know your limits, right? But there's levels to this. Mm-hmm. So how about if a battalion chief who's going to roll up and be incident command, does he know the limits of the crew on truck 10? Does he know the limits of the crew on truck 20? When he sends us, you know, we came fresh out, just bent over, got a new bottle, and he sends us straight to the roof. Does he know we're good to go? And he's out there putting in some sweat equity with us. He knows, like, oh yeah, I'm no factor. They're good to go.
Right.
Whereas if he was, you know, holed up in an office somewhere and doesn't know, he might think like, oh, well, that's kind of dangerous. I don't know about that. Right. But he knows how far we can go, how far he can trust us. And that's reassuring to me, because that frees up us to go do more.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. One question I do like to, I try to remember to ask the guest, which I really should probably put a note on my desk to ask this question. I know you're only 4 years in, so, yeah. You know, and this question, when I ask, I don't want people to think I'm asking the individual to blow their boat, but at the end of your career, where would you like to see yourself?
Yeah, that is an interesting question, because it's hard to see that far out mm-hmm. from right here. I like the idea of staying on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm part of the problem, like we talked about earlier.
Know if that's really a problem, but yeah, that's a whole nother, because like, yeah. Not to cut you off, but I truly think it's up to the individual. Like, if the individual is happy and content with where they're at, you know, that's added pressure when a bunch of people keep going up to them going, hey, why didn't you take this test? Why didn't you do it? Because I say that because I know a decent amount of people who were in that position and they took the role and they hate what they do. Mm-hmm. And very few, I know a few that actually have gone to the chief and go, hey, this ain't for me. I'd like to demote myself if you're cool with it. And the chief's like, well, if you're cool with it, then I guess I have to be cool with it. But like, I don't want to be put in a position where you hate your job after that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, like, Lieutenant, when at some point we've got plans, once we have more stations and some dual run houses, to put captains in, that would still be an operational on the truck sort of position. So maybe in that captain spot, so I can still be operational. I'm still young. I'm 39 years old.
Okay.
It's hard for me to keep track.
It happens as we get older.
Yeah, there'll be guys though that are, you know, get down to do something and they're like, oh man, I'm getting too old for this. And I'm like, oh, how old are you? And they say 32, 33. But I'm like, oh, okay.
Right. Right.
Like, I still feel young at 39. So yeah, I'd like to stay on the truck operationally for as long as possible. Stay close to the action, but most importantly, close to the guys.
Stay plugged in. Yeah, still plugged in. Because, you know, I mean, and no offense to any battalion chief that I've ever interviewed or anyone that's current a battalion chief, but like, when you get into that battalion role, when you're in the buggy or the car, unless you have an aide, it's just you. And when you're so used to being on a truck with two or three or four guys around you shooting the joking around and stuff, I mean, you could do that by yourself, but you're gonna look really crazy if somebody pulls up to you and they see somebody, you're just talking to yourself, like, who's this dude talking to? You know what I mean? But like, you're by yourself. It's a different role. Sometimes the guys look at you a little differently. You might not feel a part like you're one of the guys anymore. So I totally understand your whole gifs. I like to stay on the truck.
Right. And I mean, you need people. We every department, everyone needs people in that battalion chief role, in an assistant chief role, at the top of the heap, but in the chief role, that are passionate and knowledgeable and, want people to be operating at the highest levels. But at the end of the day, you're not putting hands on patients, you're not, throwing ladders, climbing through windows, searching houses, putting water on fire, like doing the things that are actually going to make the difference, that that someone else is going to do that. And that's fine. There's always going to be someone that's hungry and young and ready to do that. But it's just hard to see it into the future in a place where I want to not do those things,
Totally get you. Totally got you. With that being said, too, if you're okay with it, how could, and I don't mean by like giving out your phone number unless you want to, but if somebody wanted to get on that email list, would you be comfortable telling like how they can contact you to do that?
Just shoot me an email at either my personal email, which is mlukegentry@gmail. That's M as in Matthew. I go by my middle name because I'm complicated. but yeah, mlukegentry@gmail, or my city email is lgentry@cibolotx.gov. So yeah, just shoot me an email and let me know you're interested. I could add your name in, and they come out. I send them out once a tour. We work a 48-96 schedule, so about once a week, I'll shoot one out.
And before we part out, is there any other message, any other thing you'd like to say out there to anybody who's struggling a little bit? Maybe they've been a little complacent, they just don't know it. Any positive reaffirming message you can share?
Yeah. So I know we talked about earlier, the people that need to hear the message likely aren't the ones listening out there getting the information and plugged in. So I kind of tried to speak to the people that are plugged in, but we all know there's haters out there. Sometimes it's more obvious, sometimes they're more boisterous and in your face. So don't be discouraged by the haters, man. There's always going to be haters. There's always going to be people that try to push you down, hold you down, say that's stupid. But if you know that something's right, if you know it's the right thing, put in the work. Don't be scared to put in the work. And I think what'll change people's minds is the results. But a lot of times it takes some sweat, it takes some work, sometimes a lot of work before you get the results. You don't just show up and say, "Hey, results," and people bow down and say, "Oh, okay, cool, let's do it that way." Put in the work, put in the sweat, and when the results come, people will say, "Okay, well, maybe I need to listen." Don't be discouraged by all the noise, all the hate, people saying, "Oh, that's stupid," or "Why y'all out there working so hard? Y'all gonna be worn out when you can't work out on shift because you're not gonna
You
be ready for
can't. God forbid you do that and go all out. Man, what are
Right.
y'all? What happens if we get that fire today?
We automatic aid with our neighboring city, and I had a talk with one of the drivers on a fire alarm call just a couple tours ago. How people were giving him crap for working out during shift. I said, "Well, if you're not ever working out so that you can be ready, you're never going to be ready because you never worked out." So, yeah, don't hesitate, man. Whether it's getting outside and training, being physically fit, sharing different perspectives, things that help motivate you and you think might help others, don't be scared. Step out and do the thing. If you know something's right, like, take that step forward, but run it through a filter first. Don't just go sending a bunch of stuff out there. Run it through a filter. Am I being humble about it? Is it selfless? Am I doing this out of love for my crewmates, for my fellow shift mates, right? Is it coming from the right place of my heart? Once you run it through that filter, send it. Do it with a smile on your face and a full heart, and yeah, enjoy it. And sometimes you got to plant a seed and water it and do a lot of work. That's the reps, that's the sweat, that's the pain. that goes into it before any fruit shows up. You know, it takes a while. So.
Well said. Well said. Luke, I really appreciate you coming on here. I have to give a shout out because this wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Chief Tom Hollick. He's the reason why I was able to get in contact with you. So thank you, Chief. If you're listening, appreciate the hookup. I can see why he was like, I got a guy for you, and it's you. I can definitely tell, man. Like, I think you're going to go very far in your career. And it's not only, in my opinion, because of you. It's because of who you surround yourself with, the people that, you know, you kind of see influence in. So I just want to say keep going. And I really appreciate you coming on here, spreading the good word for sure.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you for what you do, putting the good word out there and giving so many people opportunity to share and, you know, so many people opportunity to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, you enjoy your morning.
Yes, I will. I will. I got a doctor's appointment here in a little bit, but yes, hopefully you do too. I think I heard little kiddos or some kids in the background, so I'm sure they're primed and ready for daddy time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got one turning 1 year this next month. So
Okay. Yeah, now I remember I'm not too far from you. Mine's five, so I'm like 4 years ahead of you, but I remember those days, and yeah.
Soaking in a little moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I appreciate you, Luke.
All right. Thanks, Danny.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.